Wow, there were certainly a world of emotions in that one movement. If you're just joining us, we're in the WRTI Performance Studio with cellist Chase Park and pianist Michael Davidman. They are students at Curtis, and they are playing for us Beethoven's 4th cello sonata. That was so amazing, the way he combines this tender, dreamlike music with angry, forceful music. What are you thinking about when you're switching gears so quickly like that? Michael.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to say, because when I'm playing, it's a little bit different. Like when I'm studying it, I think, you know, I go within myself and I think of when I feel these certain ways in the music. But when I'm actually playing it, I'm just thinking about at the actual music itself and the playing and just making sure that comes across. I don't necessarily have anything in mind in particular.
Yeah, Chase, you were going to say something?
Oh, well, for me, I think the more I think, the more I can't actually focus on what I'm feeling. So I try to just like let everything go and just take a chance. Yeah.
I meant to mention, we are also streaming video live of this performance. But you can go to our website, wrti.org, and click on the post, and it will take you right to the YouTube video. So you've been working for a week with Colin Carr, studying this particular sonata, but there are 4 other duos who have been working on each of the other sonatas. What's the experience been like for you?
It's definitely been a lot of Beethoven, which is a good thing. I don't think you can ever know too much about Beethoven. There's always a lot more you can uncover, and then once you uncover sort of figure out his language, then you can apply it to your own life, and then from your own experiences and your own thoughts, you could I guess transport yourself into his world and then come out with this completely personal interpretation. So I think it's quite amazing.
Well, what does Beethoven teach you about life?
Well, he struggled so much, and so much of his music is reflective and just like a search for something. And I think that it definitely applies to our lives, because as musicians and artists, we're trying to search for who we are and what we can communicate to others and why we do what we do. So,
yeah. I mean, also just to add to the question before about working with Mr. Carr, one of the things that I really appreciate about his coaching of this music is he's very attentive to detail, like the rhythmic detail, like just making sure that everything is exactly played with rhythmic integrity and in time, to make sure that we're really focusing on that. Because a lot of times late Beethoven, it's very easy to take a lot of liberty with that, and then it ends up becoming less effective, in my opinion. And when you just do what he says, because a lot of, like, for example, the opening of this second movement, there's this 64th note passage, and like Beethoven, that's a representation, it's not meant to be exactly in time, but at the same time, he did, write it out, and I think that's an important aspect to make sure everything is still.
When you say 64th note passage, can you describe what you mean?
There's eight notes, but in eight equal divisions within a eighth note. So that's 16 notes for per quarter note, I guess. Yeah. 16 notes per...
In the slow movement, yeah. It's the fastest moving notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So musically, where do these sonatas fit within your musical training? Are they very important to learn?
I think absolutely.
Well, for Beethoven, I mean, for pianists, learning the late works, those piano sonatas are very important. They're very challenging, and those are pieces that, you work on for your whole life, basically. And Beethoven is always a huge challenge to really do justice to a lot of it. Because he didn't always write, instrumentally. He wrote whatever was in his head. So it's up to you to really make that happen in a way where other composers are more grounded in the instrument that they're writing for sometimes.
Jace?
Well, unlike the piano, we don't actually have too much repertoire. So I'd say, just like the Bach suites, the five Beethoven cello sonatas are just as iconic. So, and I think that every cellist is going to play multiple sonatas by Beethoven. So,
So, introduce us to the second movement.
It's incredible. There's another introduction just like in the first movement. However, this is a little different. It starts off extremely peaceful right after this turbulent first movement. It's almost spiritual, and then suddenly he goes into the deepest, darkest place in his heart or in his mind, and tries to search for something that he does stumble upon, and it becomes extremely tender. And then we're brought back to the first movement. It's almost as though he's remembering something from his past, which is why he goes back to the first movement. And then he had a sense of humor, and I think he just blew off all of his conflict with this last movement, which is like a chase. However, despite being in his happy place, there is still conflict. He's still insecure about something, and you'll hear it. It's quite funny, actually.
Okay. That was great. I'm glad you mentioned Beethoven's sense of humor, because I think sometimes we don't think about Beethoven as having a sense of humor, particularly in this late part of his life when he was having so many struggles with his deafness.
Right, yeah.
But it was great. We've been listening to Chase Park and Michael Davidman play Beethoven's Cello Sonata No. 4. They will play it again tomorrow in a special concert at Curtis. It's a two-part concert where all of Beethoven's sonatas will be performed. Cello sonatas will be performed. There's one performance starts at 5 and one starts at 7:30. Is that right?
8, but eight. I think there's the talk. Well, when is that?
There's a pre-concert talk. Right.
That must be at 7:30.
At 5 o'clock. It may be at 5. I don't know. You should check the website. Check our website. We'll have a link to Curtis's website for details. Mm-hmm. But it would be great to hear all 5 sonatas in a row.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I wish you the best. You are so busy. If you take a look at Curtis's schedule, I know, Michael, you have a graduation recital coming up.
On Tuesday.
And Chase, you said you had several other recitals to play.
Yeah, one on Thursday. And I'm playing the Brahms piano quartet in C minor on Thursday. And then May 4th, I'm playing the Chopin piano sonata. It's a Chopin cello sonata.
Wow. Yeah. So you have a lot of music running around your heads right now. And Michael, you're graduating. What are your plans?
I will be going back to New York. I'm going to Juilliard for my master's. This summer, I'm going to the Norfolk Chamber Music Festival, and that's pretty much what I'm going to be doing for the next couple of months.
Right.
Juilliard for the next 2 years.
What are you going to miss about Philadelphia?
I'd say mostly the look of the city. I find it really, I really like around Curtis. It's really beautiful, and it's very different from New York, which I like. I really like Philadelphia.
Well, that's great. Well, once you're in the Curtis family, I think people come back a lot. So we look forward to seeing you again. And Chase, what are you doing this summer? You're still at Curtis for a while.
So I'll probably be preparing for my master's additions. I'm in May, right after school. I'm going to Germany for a little competition, and then I'll try and teach as much as I can over the summer and prepare for the Curtis on tour that I'm going on in September.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure to listen to you play. I'm excited about this recital that you have coming up and all the things in your future. Thanks so much for coming to WRTI to share your music with us.
Thank you.